All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining the Identity Implementers Working Group call for July 15th. As you know, in these calls, we tend to go over the various happenings from a lot of different working groups and industry organizations related to identity. So we'll do that today. And then for our presentation in the latter part of the call, I've invited Timo Glastra, who's the founder of Animos Solutions, to come and present on some of their open source and SSI work and how they're using that as part of a national collaboration to help citizens during emergencies and crises. And so I look forward to that as well. We are recording this call, and the Linux antitrust policy in essence says that we are an industry of collaborators, and we like to share things back and forth. If there's anything that's proprietary or patented or anything like that from your respective companies, we ask that you keep that out of the call, or at least make everyone aware that that's what that is, so we can assure that things that we share back and forth in these calls can be used by everyone. Let's see, I have put the link to this wiki page that you're seeing in the chat. Please feel free to sign the attendee list. That helps us know who's attending and reach out to any of you should the need arise. Before I get started, are there any first-time attendees that would like to introduce themselves? All right.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'll introduce myself.
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, everyone. My name is Anna. I'm working with Timo at Animos Solutions. So I've joined today to hear about what you guys are doing and to support Timo. Nice to meet you.
Well, thank you for joining. It's good to have you here. Anyone else? All right, by way of announcements, we have a few things coming up. So IIW, the Internet Identity Workshop, is kind of the main identity conference that goes on twice a year, usually in October and April. And so we've got another one coming up in October. It's online this time. They're planning to resume in person at the Computer History Museum in Silicon Valley starting in April. Tickets are there. Now, I did receive an email the other day from IIW announcing two half-day events that will be virtual as well, but they'll have different topics. I'm not sure of the cost. I think these might be free, but please don't quote me on that. I'll have to check the email. The first one is coming up here real soon on July 22nd, and that will be a set of presentations on the user experience of self-sovereign identity. Also, coming up on August 4th, there's another half-day event, and I think I missed putting down the topic for that. See if I can find that real quick. Yes, this one will be The Business of SSI is how that's entitled. And so this is new. I don't think they've done this in the past, but feel free to register for those. IIW conferences are very much worthwhile. That's where a lot of late-breaking creative activity emerges. And so I love attending these conferences. The last one is the Good Health Pass Interoperability Blueprint Draft. So this comes to us from the Trust Over IP Foundation. And there is a draft on using self-sovereign identity and verifiable credentials as part of a COVID-19 process for identification and whether somebody's been, you know, sick and got well or got the vaccine and so forth. And so That blueprint is available here in draft form right now. As I understand it, it is right at the crux of being released officially. They're just waiting for some final administrative details, and then that will be presented publicly. So feel free to take a look at that. Yes, sir.
I was going to say, you're absolutely right. This is Dan. It's got, the draft has been approved by the steering committee, and they're just working out, as you said, the final details. I would expect in the next couple of weeks, we'll share press announcement and the link to the final version of the document within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, this is exciting. This is a big effort. Thank you for that update. This is a big effort with a lot of participation from a lot of different people. And so, I put the link there as well as the website, goodhealthpass.org. Are there any other announcements that I've missed? Okay. Let's go through the working groups. The main identity working group, I believe they canceled their last meeting. The one before that, they talked about the EIDAS. I don't know how you pronounce that. But Europe's identity laws. And so I've put that information there. We talked about that before, so I'll kind of skip over that for now.
Right. So, just real briefly, it's EIDAS. And so what they did was initial EIDAS regulation was, it's the electronic ID and trust services. And it was very centralized focus, identity card, smart card focus. And what this new legislation is proposing, after some input from, probably folks on this call, is to be a little bit more self-sovereign identity centric. So the proposed legislation updating the EIDAS legislation of 2016 is, among other things, more SSI friendly, and they're legislating basically an identity wallet that supports W3C verifiable credentials and blah, blah, blah. So please take a look at the proposed legislation, and there's mechanisms to provide feedback to the legislators.
Oh, excellent update. Thank you. That's a little new to me. I didn't know they were tying in that directly with the SSI technologies we're working on. Is they're going to be compatible with Hyperledger and DIF technologies as well? Is that what I'm understanding?
So the first, but this revised legislation is definitely calling out identity wallets for the purpose of having verifiable attestations, as they're calling them. The implementation legislation to follow will get to more of what you're saying. Is it going to be areas-based? I doubt they're going to specify a specific technology stack. But the intent is to have something that's open source, interoperable, and areas will fit that bill. But the first is to legislate the issuance and use of these identity wallets.
That is excellent. Very encouraging. Thank you very much. Let's see, the contributors call. I think that last happened on the 6th of July, from what I understand. The big news there is the indie networks are being upgraded. The big upgrade is from Ubuntu 16.04, and that PR is ready to merge as of the proceedings of that call, and 20.04 is being prepared. Now, the first line item that I've put right here is a link to a status document that will give you the full current status of all these technologies, Indy Plenum, Indy Node, SDKs, and so forth. And so feel free to take a look at that. I think we're getting pretty close to 20.04, but I've been saying that for a while. Although it feels more close than it did several months ago. Anybody attend that have any other comments on any contributors? All right, Hyperledger Aries, the A call, as far as I can tell, I think it was canceled. The
they're on a bit of a summer break.
Okay.
So I think it's going to be several rounds before they're back. Just I think the most of the folks that organize the A call are busy enough or on holiday during the summer that they're suspending those just briefly.
Okay, thank you. I actually dialed in yesterday and I was the only one, and so had a good conversation, I guess. But so I was wondering if that's what they had done. A couple of the other groups are doing the same kind of thing. All right, Sam, would you mind giving an update on the B call?
Yeah, so the primary thing that we did there was talk about interaction documents. Keith Smith gave a really great presentation. Interaction documents seem to fill a space between protocols and machine-readable governance frameworks in a way that I think is super interesting. And so there, he definitely caused a lot of thinking to occur. His document is going to end up being an RFC so that it's public and we can in a place where we can discuss and talk about it with a recognition that there's lots of continued thinking and learning to go on here. So it was a very cool conversation. The recording is not up yet, but will be later today.
Excellent. Thank you. That's something I hadn't heard of, the transaction documents. So
brand new concept. He's the one who brought it up and talked about it. So there's it was a very good conversation.
Excellent. Thank you for that update. Did anyone attend the Aries Bifold user groups that would like to give an update?
That was relatively brief, but the work is ongoing there. I wasn't there, but I heard the report from James. It's progressing, but I don't think there's any specific announcements on this week.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to point out for those that are new on the call, the Aries Bifold user group, they're doing a couple of things. They're building a version of the Aries platform in React Native and TypeScript. And they've created, where I have a link here somewhere, Aries Framework JavaScript right here. They've got an initial release. This is a brand new project. I probably wouldn't try to include this in a commercial application just yet. But what's super encouraging about this is the group is basically starting from kind of the ground up and putting together client and server applications. And so they're walking through the whole process of what do I have to build to put together a wallet and client and what libraries do I pull in? What do I have to rebuild? Their intent is to gain portability through React, TypeScript and JavaScript and so forth. So whether or not that's your code base, I highly recommend this group as a way to walk through the process of putting together a client application. So I put all their information there as well. Let's see, there's been some new releases from Aries Cloud Agent Python. So please note that. There's been some work on the NDVDR on the shared library components. These are written in Rust. Last week I gave a presentation here about taking the DidComRS library and using a Mozilla tool to create portable language wrappers. So as I get that a little more completed, I should release the code on that today or tomorrow. My intent is to kind of look at some of these others and see how we can take Rust libraries and make a more easy integration to say Android and iPhone. So please note that work is going on there. some upgrades, updates to Framework Go. These look to me a little bit like evolutionary updates. Is there anything of particular note that I didn't put there? All right. The URSA meeting, did anyone happen to attend that one? All right, that was lightly attended from their notes. They made that comment, but I think what's going on is, you know, depending on where you are in the world, we're getting ready for summer or winter vacations. And so that's a little light, but I put those notes there as well. Trust over IP. The last members meeting was June 26th, all members meeting. And so I've put the notes there from that meeting. We talked about that before. We held a recent steering committee meeting here the other day. And as Dan mentioned at the beginning of the call, Good Health Pass is a big topic of discussion. And they're working out some final administrative issues to release that officially, even though the draft is available for review. But the slides in the recording there. One thing of note is the US government House of Representatives is holding hearings on how artificial intelligence authenticates individuals remotely. And there's a whole bunch of reasons to do that. But part of that hearing is for them to solicit information that really, from our perspective, amounts to what is the future of digital identity networks? What frameworks are available? How do they interoperate? What standards do we have? Do we write information to the ledger? There's a whole series of issues. It's wide open, and that is going on here very quickly, I believe in the next week or so. I'm sorry I don't have a link for that, but I could probably find one if anyone's interested. What's interesting here is while I'm referencing the US government here, the different governments around the world for all the different countries are looking at this very topic. And so the work that we're doing is very relevant to what will become national and international legislation here in the not too distant future. Let's see, I put updates to the links here for the various Trust Over IP working groups. I would highly recommend taking a look at that. You don't have to be a member of Trust Over IP to attend. You do have to be a member to participate interactively, but feel free to attend that. They're taking a Trust Over IP, whereas Hyperledger looks at actual implementation and code bases and whatnot. Trust Over IP takes a governance level approach, looking at how different implementation packages interact with each other, what are the technology stacks, government or governance issues related to all of that. And so I highly recommend getting involved there, if not attending and reviewing the proceedings, because that'll help you know how what you're building may interoperate with other things that other groups are building. And I don't think there are any particular things of note there at this time other than Good Health Pass, which we've talked about. Let's see, DIDCOM working group. Sam, would you mind giving us a quick update on that?
Yeah, had some good discussions, talked about PRs, and we've begun a triage effort on our issues that has already begun to help organize the work surrounding those.
Excellent. A lot of good things happening there. And that's one of my favorite working groups because it's based in interoperability. It's how we all talk. Our apps will talk to each other. So I've put references to that. Did anyone attend the interoperability working group? I didn't either. So I have put updated links to that. Let's see, on July 1st, the Sovereign Technical Governance Board met. The number one topic going on there is the Ubuntu upgrade to the ND technologies. Mentioned that previously in this call. And then there's a status update to let you know where everything is. Right now for ND technologies, if you operate any of the steward nodes or whatnot, all of that is Ubuntu 16 based. They've advised everyone to purchase an upgrade, like a maintenance license from Canonical, which is fairly cost effective. While they, because Ubuntu 16 has gone out of public maintenance, so that's why they've asked everyone to purchase a maintenance contract. But then the upgrade to Ubuntu 20, I believe, is here very quickly. Discussions, they had discussions on the DIDSOV versus DIDND, and then using Carrie as a witness. The Steward Council has gone on summer/winter break until August, I believe. End of August is the next time that they will be meeting from their last meeting. I've put the slides there as well. That's kind of a summary of what's going on in our industry right now. Is there anything that I've missed that any of you would like to share? All right. Well, as I mentioned, we're privileged to have Timo Glastra from Animo Solutions in the Netherlands join us today and talk about their SSI work and how they're using that for emergency software solutions. Let me go ahead and stop sharing. Timo, are you set up and ready to go?
Yeah, I'll just quickly share my screen and then let me see. All right. Can you see my screen?
Yep, looks great.
Awesome. All right, so I wanted to give a presentation a bit about the open source self-sovereign identity software we're building and projects we built on top of it with a focus on, like, mainly the most what we work on is Arch Framework JavaScript. You mentioned it briefly before. Just I want to mention like what it is, where we're at, what we're working on, and how you can use it. And then I want to highlight a project we're working on at the moment. It's about safety communities, where we're using Arch Framework JavaScript to build this solution. So Arch Framework JavaScript, it's a framework for building SSI agents. You have multiple around. You have Arch Framework Go, you have Arch Framework .NET, Arch Cloud Agent Python, and now also Arch Framework JavaScript. And we basically just try to implement the RS RFCs, but we have a few goals behind, like, what we would like to do with the framework. And the first thing is that we want to be cross-platform, and it doesn't work well on all platforms yet. But you can already use Arch Framework JavaScript server-side using Node.js. You can use it to build desktop applications using Electron. And you can also use it for building cross-platform mobile applications in React Native. So as you already mentioned, Steve, is Arch Mobile Agent React Native, and the Bifold project, it's built on Arch Framework JavaScript. Another thing why we chose JavaScript is because it's a popular and accessible language, which means it's very accessible for people to get started building on it. Because a lot of the times, like when you're working with crypto stuff and related things, you often get down to Rust code very quickly. And I think that's very important. All of the lower level stuff in Erisfin with JavaScript is implemented in Rust because it makes more sense. But if you want to start building on it and extend on it, we think you can do a lot of it just in JavaScript and TypeScript, which is a lot more accessible to early developers or just people that are very familiar already with web technologies. And by using TypeScript on top of JavaScript, we can like take a lot of the headaches away or the quirks that you get from working with JavaScript. And what we're also trying to do is we want to make it as easy to use to start building with the framework. Like it takes some time because there's a lot of work involved in building a framework, but more and more we're making it easier to like start building. And for example, this is a short code example that imports the required stuff. You import you install the framework core, and you just install the platform specific dependencies. In this case, for example, for React Native, and you configure the agent. And this is enough to create a connection with another agent. And we intend to make it even shorter in the future, but like compared to, it makes it a lot easier for people to start using SSI. And also, you don't have to eventually be an SSI expert or know about how Erisfin works to start building on top of it. And I think EchoPy, for example, already does this. Like it exposes a great API, but it doesn't work in mobile environments, for example. And so this is also, for example, another piece of code in how you use it in a React Native app. And I think the nice thing to highlight here is, for example, we created another package that's a Redux store, which holds your state. And we've added listeners to it. And it would just mean like whenever, for example, you receive a credential offer, you will automatically have the updated state in your front end. So you don't have to worry about keeping it up to date or interacting with the agent. Like the agent will push changes to you so you can do with it whatever you want, which takes a lot away of the complexities of managing like the protocol level stuff in building agents. There are already some projects built on top of AFJ or starting to build on top of AFJ. It's a relatively new library, but we're making good progress at the moment. And we also noticed that people are like, we are attracting more contributors, which means we can do like more work because more people working on it like is beneficial for us all. We have Cardia, which is built on AFJ and Erisfin Bifold, a project from the Linux Foundation from Indicio for health credentials. UNIC is the United Nations International Computing Center is adopting EchoPy and AFJ to build their tech stack. EchoPy for server side, AFJ for building their mobile wallet. Now we of course have the Erisfin mobile agent React Native repo. We've also used it in several student projects. We work a lot with students to like just take some SSI ideas, let them implement it, see how using the framework works for them. And I think they get to work on some really cool, innovative projects. Another project is, and that's what I will go to in a minute, is the inclusive safety communities that we're working on at the moment. So the current status is we have React Native support, Node.js, Electron also. You can issue credentials, you can create connections, present proof, like basic stuff. We just merged mediator support, which means you can use it with EchoPy as a mediator. And we're working on some other improvements that makes it easier to use. For example, smart auto acceptance of credentials, so you don't have to manage the protocol flow yourself, connections, issuance and verification, or for example, revocation of indie credentials. basically what we try to do is get as quickly as possible to ARI's interop profile v1. So we have like a ready base to build on. And from there, we like want to start building out. And where we want to work towards to is AIP2 support and making it easier to use the framework with the first focus on mobile, because that's where the most need is from our side, but also from others. And that will include PBS signatures and the V2 protocols, diff presentation exchange, like all the things you expect from an up-to-date ARIs agent. There are already a lot of external dependencies we can use for that and reuse. So I think that's really nice that there's a lot of work going on in the JavaScript ecosystem that are working on like libraries specifically for decentralized identity that we can just build on top of. And I think that's really great. I think that's also partly due to the accessibility of the language and because it's a popular language that it's a tool people start with because it's also easy to start implementing in it before you do, for example, an implementation in Rust. And we want to provide some mobile components with it that are like used in a lot of the mobile wallets that we notice you want. You want import and export. You probably want biometric unlocking of your wallet. You want push notification integration with your mediator, DITCOM deep linking, like all the stuff that every wallet needs and we could provide in an easy to use SDK. So one of the projects that we're working on at the moment is inclusive safety communities. And it's a project we're doing with the LMS, which is a national collaboration of emergency dispatch offices. And we want to be able to include like volunteers, citizens that can help in emergency situations. We did this as part of, we started with this project as part of the Odyssey Hackathon. This is a Dutch hackathon held every year in the Netherlands here. And they say they're the biggest blockchain hackathon in the world. And they just have like industries from a lot of places that have challenges that they want to solve using innovative technologies. It's not only blockchain, it can also be AI. And this was from a challenge set out by the Dutch police and the Dutch Public Safety Alliance. And basically the problem they have is that how can the dispatch center, which is like the people that control when you call 911, you get something on the line and they will manage it. They will send the right people to the right place. They're looking for ways to see how they can find qualified citizen volunteers that can help or maybe even solve emergency situations while professionals are on their way. And this is a hard, difficult to solve solution because you want to be very careful with sending people to emergency situations because it can be dangerous. Maybe they do things wrong and who's accountable for such situations. So we really need to find a way how to approach this problem. For example, we're having a focus on first working with the fire department. And for a fighter, the firefighters, it can take up to 8 minutes for the fire department to arrive, which is in the Netherlands, which is a pretty small and densely populated country. And smoke inhalation can already kill in 3 minutes. So you have a gap of 5 minutes there, which can, so the time, each second counts in this case. What we came up with is of our solution is to connect the dispatch to a pool of volunteers from the already existing volunteer applications you have. You have multiple initiatives already that provide like a way to help in situations. For example, you have like a CPR application that you can, if you're got your diploma, you can register there, and when emergency happens, you can get notified. So this will allow dispatchers to find volunteers and like have a direct communication channel and control them, like manage them and let them help in situations like they do already with their current employees. And so they can get like the right volunteer help to the right location. To give a high level overview of how it works is somebody has an emergency and calls the dispatch center, so 911, and they say what the problem is, and the dispatch, the person working in the dispatch center will use their already their experience to determine like what do we need in this emergency case, and so they can specify the requirements, and from a pool of volunteers, like the people that have registered to participate in this project, can get notified. And there are two ways we like find the right person at the right time. And the first one is approximate location. And it's approximate to preserve the privacy. We don't want to track people like on a very high resolution, but we need to know an approximate location because otherwise there's no way we can like manage all volunteers and know like it will be too resource intensive to manage. And the second one is a qualification filter. And that basically means like if we have an emergency situation where somebody has a heart attack or somebody needs to be get CPR, it's very important that you send someone to there that's able to do that. You don't want to send me to that to that emergency. And that's where we use credentials. The credentials allow you to store your qualifications in a secure wallet on your mobile device. And when needed, you prove like to the dispatch center, I am qualified to do this and help you with this emergency. And this way we don't need to store like on the dispatch side or let the government store everything about you to know when you can help. So it's just in time proving in an emergency. And when the volunteer, like when you have a match, so you will get notified and you can choose to help in a situation. So when you choose to help, you will share like proof that you can help in this situation, and we will start like high resolution tracking. So the dispatch center can exactly see where you are. They can guide you to the emergency location. It can provide navigation inside the app to the emergency. And you also have like a secure communication channel. So you can, the dispatch center can directly talk to you, and you can directly talk to the dispatch to be able to coordinate. So to go in a bit more in depth on like how the flow works is, when an emergency happens, the emergency is created. This is done by the dispatch center. And they select which requirements are needed. Like, do you just need information? Then you can just send a fairly unskilled person to it that can just take recordings or note down very important things. Or do you need like, if there's a fire, you want some more qualified. So that you can decide which the requirements are. We can then send a silent push notification to phones that are in proximity of the emergency. So we don't know the exact location, but we know, all right, you're near this, and we can send it. And on the device itself, we can do in the background, we can check, am I near enough this emergency situation? And do I have the qualification? If yes, we will make convert the silent push notification to an actual push notification, and the user can get notified. So they know, like, they're like, you're qualified to help. We have an emergency. Do you want to help? And then you can either accept or decline. And if you accept, we start like the process of, all right, we'll give you directions. We'll say what to do. And the communication channel is open. It could be that you want multiple people to help. Like if there's a large emergency, in that case, there won't be a single person, but multiple volunteers can be selected to help. Dispatch can then see exactly where the volunteer is, and you have a communication channel to communicate both ways. And so this like how the whole flow works, and if the emergency is resolved, you go back to normal, so you don't have the exact location tracking anymore. How the approximate location filtering works is we use H3, which is a library from Uber, and they use it for their driving services. But what it does, it divides the world into hexagons, and this gives you a way to like pinpoint locations on a map. And what it also provides is different skills. So with this, like not every location in the world is as densely populated. So where it's very densely populated, you want higher resolution tracking because there are a lot of people. And if you make it too large, you don't have anything with the information because it's just too much. So in the very highly densely populated areas, we'll use smaller hexagon sizes to be able to pinpoint more precisely where it is. And in the more rural areas, we can make it larger to have like there are less people, so it's less resource intensive, and we don't have to require to do this such high resolution location tracking. And we're currently working on a pilot to like start building this out. We're working with the regional fire department and the regional dispatch office, and we're going to pilot in a low populated area in the Netherlands. That's where they suffer the most from the long traveling times to the emergency. Like in the high populated areas, like the traveling times are of course less. I think this is only in like the Netherlands. The long trips could be short relative to other countries. And we start with off-duty firefighters because they have like very defined skill levels. And you know, like the fire department can issue the credentials themselves. So it's like an ecosystem they can control for now. And like, if this works out really well, we can expand to include other qualifications, not from the fire department itself. The flow that we have is that firefighters receive credentials based on the qualification training levels. You have like different qualifications, different training levels, and that determines basically what you are allowed to do. You get the credential issued by the fire department where the firefighter works, and the credentials are then stored in a custom holder application. So it's just an SSI wallet, but like with the custom things we need for like location tracking, that kind of stuff. On the dispatch side, we have emergency codes that correspond to like what is happening. And we start with matching existing low risk emergency codes to qualifications that could help in specific situations. So we know like if this emergency happens, we need to look for people with this specific qualifications. We define custom DITCOM protocols to be able to facilitate the communication between the parties. So the the credential presentation exchange could be used using the standard protocols, but for something like location sharing or a bit more advanced communication protocol, we can define custom DITCOM protocols. So it is just a screenshot, like a mock-up we made, is how a thing like this could work. Like you have on your mobile phone, you can choose to accept or decline. And from a dispatch side, you can create and manage like where's the emergency happening and what do I need for this emergency. Some of the challenges I think we ran into or running into with a focus on SSI, like we want to be able to store the minimal amount of data that could be used to fulfill the requirements of this. I think the only things we need to store is we need to be able to send them push notifications. So we need push notification identifiers and we need to know an approximate location. There's really the minimal amount of data we at the moment need to be able to locate citizens. We don't need to store any like personal, like approximate location could still be seen as correlatable data, but it's the minimal we can get to be able to let people help in situations. And the other things like we need approximate but still useful location data. So we need to do like a lot of research to see like at what level, at what proximity is like useful that we can really pinpoint the right people in a situation without like oversharing their location data. And some other challenges are like more in the long run is like, how can we integrate such wallet functionality into existing applications? We don't want to create necessarily a new application, but we want other applications to be able to adopt these protocols so they could integrate with it themselves. That means probably providing SDKs and easy to use stuff for them to integrate this. And also how to scale this is like one of the applications we have here in the Netherlands has more than 170,000 volunteers spread across the Netherlands. So, and it's just for one skill. So if we want to scale this to all qualifications that people have, then we're going to have a lot of volunteers. So we need to be able to be sure that we can scale this solution to like, a nationwide thing. So there are a few reasons why I think SSI or ARIES is a good fit for this problem. DITCOM allows for a secure channel between the dispatch center and volunteers, and it also provides the tools needed to exchange the credentials and prove that they are qualified in this situation. The protocols approach of DITCOM allows us to define an open standard that all of volunteer app can integrate with easily. And the credentials allow the dispatch center to verify the skills. So they know for certain that sending a volunteer to a situation is safe. And the benefit of AFJ for us in this use case is it's a framework, it's cross-platform. So we can use it for the issuer, holder and verifier side. That means not completely different tech stacks for all of the sites. An open source foundation that we're building with AFJ makes it easier for other applications to integrate and like build, adopt this solution, but in their own way and in their own app, because everybody has their own setup. And we think also that's an accessible language, as that means it's a higher chance that the government can maintain it and extend it for themselves. Because I think it's providing them the tools to do it themselves is better than creating something that only we can use. Another thing, and it's it's also because the cross-platform is that we can implement the protocols once and we can use it on both sides. So we have a shared implementation that allows us to quickly get started. So the next step is basically for both, like first I talked about Airstream JavaScript and the inclusive safety communities is that we'll start working at the moment on the practical implementation of the pilot. We'll take approximately 6 months to build and test the first pilot version with the fire department. And in the meantime, we'll also keep working on AFJ, get it to AIP 2.0, adding BBS credential support, GitConf v2. And we think this will really help with a more efficient flow for users and the dispatch. Like there are a lot of performance gains I think we can get from like updating to the new tools, adopting BBS signatures, some of the new libraries that are more performant. So that will, because in like there's background progressing and that sort of stuff. So we need stuff to be efficient. I also think that multiple credential format and signature suites will make it a lot easier to add more and more qualifications, even if those qualifications are issued by different vendors or that kind of stuff. So we just want to be able to use as many of the different things that are out there to be able to build this. So interested, are there any questions or notes or feedback or?
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, thanks. Thanks for presenting this. So I guess just on like the last point. So you're saying that AFJ AIRS framework for JavaScript can be used in place of Occupy. You know, so you're saying it could be used in the mobile and centralized environments, right? And so you're saying that if I understand correctly, this would be instead of, not along with Occupy then? For
yeah, it could be. The most cases we see at the moment from people adopting AFJ is using it for the mobile side and using Occupy for the server side, because it's at the moment it provides a more out-of-the-box solution. It provides a REST API, which is often what people want when building a server-side tool, because it's easier to integrate with already existing infrastructure. We intend to also add an API wrapper around the framework, but at the moment it's mostly consumed by code. But yeah, you can use it for, that's also how we're using it for this project, is like sharing the same code across all different environments, if it's server-side or client-side.
Right. I'll just ask one more quick question. I don't want to dominate this. Maybe I'll connect offline. But you know, one of your slides, you mentioned the UN, and I think you had article in blue. Does that mean, was that a hyperlink to an article related to how, you know, what they're doing in this space?
Yeah. It's. I can share a link to the. To the slides. It's they recently announced how they intend to use AIRS Framework JavaScript and AIRS Cloud Agent Python in their tech stack for their UN digital ID. And that's what they're working on at the moment. And it's a presentation I think the CTO gave at an Hyperledger working group call.
Interesting. Okay. No, I appreciate that. Thanks.
Hey, Timo, I love the idea of DIDCOM protocols for location sharing and stuff. Is that something that you guys can talk about more openly?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think we can talk about that more openly. Yeah. We haven't defined the protocols yet, but we think it will be a good, like, very It should be fairly straightforward, I think, to define a protocol to do like sharing location data on an interval with like a persistent stream.
Yep, I think there'd be a lot of interest in that. Yeah, let me know when you're ready to talk about it, and I'll get you stage.
Sure. Yeah, sounds great. Any more questions? Otherwise, I'll end it here. You can always, like, if you have more questions, either about this project or about AFJ and how you can use it, you can always reach out to me and work a chat or something, and we can have a chat.
Well, thank you, Timo. This is really amazing. It's really good to see all the technologies that we've all been working with for so long kind of come together for something so valuable as coordinating public service. I know I live in an area where there are a lot of people that are former firefighters, former emergency responders. They've been trained, they're credentialed, but they're not currently working for the local fire department, let's say.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they knew exactly where to go, they'd be more than willing to come help. And so I think this application really targets a need because people are everywhere. Fire departments are more located centrally, wherever they are. And so this is excellent. When do you think this is, what's your target deployment?
Well, the plan is to in 6 months we want to build the first pilot version and also test it out. So in the end of the 6 month period, we will like issue credentials and start using it in like integrating it in a dispatch center in Drenthe here in the Netherlands. They will start using it like besides their current workflow, they will start using this as a test to see, can we actually improve response times? So I think in the next 6 months, and if like results are good, there's a good chance we can keep working on this.
No, congratulations. This is excellent. I think you're going to see a lot of good reception globally, like lots of different locations, because I know this is a need everyone faces. Your slides, you posted a HackMD link. Is that a good one for me to share? Or I like to put slides at least referenced on the wiki page. Should I use that one?
Yeah. Yeah, you can do it. You can also create an export and attach the PDF version. I don't know if I take it off, then it will still be there.
Okay, I'll do that. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Are there any more questions before we end?
I guess just one quick one, Timo. Thanks again. I know that you're a key contributor to the Python ACAPI. Do you, just in general, do you feel that your trajectory is going to be focused more on JavaScript? You know, are you going to spend more cycles fleshing this framework out?
Our focus, we spend a lot of time on Erisch framework JavaScript for our solutions, but we also, for this, we're still thinking to maybe reuse some parts, for example, the issuer side, because that's very separated from the custom protocols. We have to use ACAPI because it just provides an easy API. So I think they'll be living alongside, and I think we're using both, but our focus is on AFJ.
Okay. But you're not leaving. You're not going to bail out on ACAPI, on the Python version. Yeah. Okay.
No.
Thanks. That was it.
Cool. Well, thanks for having me here, Steve.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining. This has been an exciting presentation. Here in this call, we like to, as I mentioned at the outset, we like to go over what's happening in the industry, but we also like to see how these technologies are applied, and your presentation has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
So I will, later today, I will post the recording of this call along with Timo's slides. And for those joining from APAC regions or that were otherwise unable to join, what's a good point of contact that they could reach you?
Either on RocketChat at Timo Glastra or at timo@animo.id.
Excellent. Thank you again. And we will close this meeting for now, and then we'll meet again here in 2 weeks' time. Thank you, everyone, cool. for joining and Thanks. For participating.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.